that's Reach and Yichoach. So even when Noach came out of the Teva, so says, even though Noach was Bechla Hashem, Vayikach Mikol Abhem Atar Mikol Oif Ator, Vayal Oilois Bamizbeach. See? Vayal Oilois Bamizbeach. So Vayorach Hashem is Reach and Yichoach. Vayemar Hashem Alibai. I'm sorry, Perk Ches Pasukum Chof and Chof Aleph. So Noah built an altar to God, and he took the behemoth Torah, all the behemoths of Torah, and from every oaf of Torah, and he was makivolos. Yeah, he burnt them, consumed the, killed them, and he slaughtered them, and then he had them consumed by the fires of the Mizbeach. So it says, Vayorach Ad Hashem Esriach HaNichoch, that God smelled the fragrant smoke, aroma. So God said that I won't curse the earth because of man. So we explained last year, we explained the what it means, Ki Yetzalev Adam Ram and Urav. Two psukim. Ki Yetzalev Adam Ram and Urav. And the pasuk of Chol Yetzamach Shalas Liba Rak Rak Kol Hayom. The difference. But the question is, what does it have to do with Vayorach Ad Hashem Esriach HaNichoach? See, yeah, what does it? What does it mean? What does it mean Vayorach Ad Hashem Esriach HaNichoach? So it has a little bit of like an anthropomorphic connotation. I mean, of course, you know. Naturally, Unklus says V'Kabel Ad Hashem Berava Yas Karbonai. Unklus immediately says that he accepted the carbon. And the Evan Ezra says he says like this. He says, the Chalila Chalila, the Yes Hashem Mariach Vleyecha. Chalila Chalila, say that Hashem smells or eats. Okay. Now he says, Atam, Rakatam Shakiba La Oila, the Yashra Lafanov. Kodam Shemariach Reach Tovu Arev. Yeah, it was good. He accepted it. He consented to it. Now. So the question is what it has to do with the rest of the pasuk. It's an interesting maimah chazal. Chazal say, kol ha-mispate miyeno yesh ba midas kono. See? Anyone who mispate means is seduced, so to speak. It means he's like his opinion has changed. What it means like this, that if somebody's angry at you and he comes to you, and he comes to your house, and you give him wine, and he drinks, and then you offer each other drinks. So he's you're mispata, friendlier. Yeah, you become friendly. You overlook your hatred and your animosities. You see, and he says it's sort of like He appeases you. Become appeased. That's the word. Appeased. He appeases you. So anyone who does that, who is appeased by his wine, so he's like that's like yesh bamidas kono. He's similar to God, because God was appeased by the carbon. You see, interesting hazal, huh? He's by the carbon. Yeah, so the Orach Chaim says that the wasn't he called him as Fata Miyeno from his own wine. He says because God really the carbonus that Noach gave belonged to God. So it means that a person who is appeased from his own wine, which means if you invite a friend or somebody to your house and you're angry at him, and then he offers you a drink from your own wine and you become appeased. So then, it's like it's like God. But at any rate, I'm not going to stress the point of yeno. But the point is, what does it have to do with the basic idea of the pasuk? And what does it mean that God was appeased? It must have something to do with the. The mashal of kolam espata miyeno. You become appeased. Somebody gives you a drink, and you don't hate him anymore. At first, you're very angry. Yes. So the anger was from the mabo.
Yeah, but it was over already. The mabo.
Yes, that's
so what
true.
What the purpose of the
for that time But the question was, will it happen? Will it occur again? It might occur again. The carbon must have had something to do with the future too. Not just Noach. Because otherwise it could have said to Noach that Biomecha, I'll never bring a marble. But no, he said Ode. And he offers me a drink, you know. And I'm friendly with him. I overlook my hatred. He appeased me, you know. And now I feel friendly towards him. And it's a nice little muscle, you know. But the question is, what does that do with the God in the world and the marble? You know, it was a tremendous, Yesh Lomid Das Kono is a tremendous praise, you know what I mean? It means he's like God. Yesh Lomid Das Kono. He partakes to a degree of God. Yesh Lomid Das Kono means that he has the Das, he partakes of the Das Hashem. You see?
He's acting like God would.
He's acting like God would. Tremendous praise. Tremendous praise. Good morning, Ervin. Good morning, Ervin Samachem Beis. Good morning, Ervin Samachem Beis. Because you can't say that Vayach Hashem Sviach and Nechach is directly related to the further part of the Pasuk. You see? he brings down the Tatmima says, Mida Teva Yishehe Adam Noach Lesratzai Slamishe Knita Kishem Evakshem Imenu V'yan Ki Al Piroi V'anog L'fayas Eschavera Al Kais Yayin. That's the pshat. Yeah. What is the meaning of this? What is the meaning of this?
Yep.
All right. Yeah. You or somebody said something offensive to you. And therefore, naturally, you feel a certain animosity towards them, right? Certain hatred, certain animosity, certain distance, and you don't want to look at them. You can't tolerate them at this point. Then he comes to your house, you know. And he offers you a drink. So what happens is, what happens there? Well, it's a psychological phenomenon. Let's understand the psychological phenomenon. All of a sudden, we see the two people are friendly. Man who before was angry becomes very friendly. What happened psychologically to this person? Why did he hate him so much before? Why now does he accept him? It's a funny phenomenon, but it is true. It is true. There is such a thing. The answer is, what happens is like this. That at first you have a certain idea about this person. When the person does something offensive to you, you immediately in your mind, you place the individual in a certain category. See? So this guy doesn't give a damn about me. And you immediately classify him, and in your mind you define him as being a certain type of a person, an inconsiderate individual. Therefore, you don't want to have anything to do with him. You can't tolerate him. See? But then the moment you see that he comes to you and he offers you a drink, what happens? In your mind, you reflect and you say, you know, he's not a bad guy. You see there's another side to his personality which you at first didn't recognize. You say, he's not such a bad fellow. All right, look, you made a mistake. It was nice. But you see that your original classification was false. You know what I mean? Isn't that the experience? Isn't that what it is? You say, look, he really is a nice guy. He came to me, he offered me a drink. My classification, perhaps I made a mistake in my classification. That's what happens. See another side of the personality, right? Therefore, you're willing to accept him. You wouldn't accept the same guy that was such a rat before. But now you see he's not that individual you imagined he was. See? So there's another side to the individual's personality. And therefore, you accept them, right? Now, the same thing. Now, what's the story over here? The story with Noach is like this. Now, we explained the difference last year. We said that the Pasuk says that God said, I'll destroy man. That was the Pasuk of destruction. The Pasuk that saved him was, Ki yetzer lev adam ram en urav. It seems almost the same thing, right? We said, no, it's two different things. V'chol yetzer machshavos libo rak ra kol hayom was the man was completely involved in his evil doings. You see? Completely involved. He said that it was because of a narcissistic type of individual. There's nothing to break him. There's nothing to stop him. He was healthy. He was strong. He was able to acquire anything he needed. All he so therefore there's nothing to make him reflect. There's nothing to make him feel that maybe he's not living properly. He's able to go ahead. He had a perfect life. His ego was very healthy. See? That was that's for Chol Yetzer Machshavas Libo Rak Rak Aleihem. Nothing can stop him. But then afterwards, when like the Ramban says, Yodah Chuli Lalam, so because of the Mabul, so things were changed. Man didn't live as long anymore. Illnesses, atmospheric changes that took place. So therefore, illnesses fell upon man, and he started his narcissism was broken. You see, and therefore. What happened was, because of that, he was able to stop for a minute and reflect. Now it's only called Yetzalei Vodim Ram and Urov. Now it's only he had the early narcissism from early youth, and the narcissism from early youth the person tries to recapture, of course, when he gets older. But he's only trying to recapture it; he never actually does recapture it because too many things stand in the way. See, too many things break him down. And that's why Lo Osef. Now the thing is like this, when the person, what is the narcissistic breakdown? A narcissistic breakdown really is, it means that another side of the personality starts to operate. See? Like this situation is a narcissistic breakdown too. Actually there's two sides in this little mushel. One side is that the person says, hey, you know, I misjudged the guy, he's not really such a bad guy. He has another side to him, you know. I didn't recognize that. I really shouldn't feel so angry at him. Not simultaneously. It could be sometimes it's a mistake on the part of the one who made this judgment, you know. Many times, a lot of times people might project their own animosities onto somebody else's doings. So a lot of times, since they do that, then they see that it wasn't so. But it's not always the case. A lot of times they're right. They could be right too. Many times a person does something wrong towards a friend, and at the time when he does that thing wrong, he can't listen to reason, because he's under the sway of a certain narcissistic force. But then he might come to grips with himself and say, second, you know, maybe I shouldn't have. What am I doing? What am I doing? I mean, I might need this guy. He's not such a bad guy. The only way, you see, the way that he can break out of his previous actions, offensive actions, is through recognition of the other person. You know what I mean? That's the way he breaks away. He says, well, just a second. I might need this guy. He's a good guy. Maybe he's right. He's not so crazy. He's accepted. So it's a breakdown of his own narcissism. Now, he has to have a narcissistic breakdown in order to admit that he made a mistake. That's why he comes to his friend and he offers him, you know what I mean? He offers him a peace offering. Now, the thing is like this. So that's what that's the analogy really. That's the analogy. What the pasuk means is Vayochad Hashem es reich anichoch, Vayomer Hashem alibo. It means like this, that because of the fact that after the mabul, what is hakrava really? Karban means the offering of peace. Karban means a recognition of an external force. The person, the people of Dara Mabul were a makrif kabanis. There's no need to. Who to who? What's the problem? And we're all in love with ourselves. We don't need anything. We're great. We have everything we need. No problems. No need for an external recognition. See? But after the Mabul, Noach, who lived through the Mabul, was the first person to recognize that there's a need. Yeah, he just experienced it. I mean, all the external force. So he came out, the first thing he did was the recognition of the external force, was the carbon. See, carbon was the recognition of the external force. So therefore, God said, because of that, because that thing which Noach did is representative of the change that will take place in man forever, which was that he will always be in a situation where while it's true, he does evil, but still he has the ability to recognize the external force. So therefore, see? That's what the pasuk means. But I just want to take it a little further. See, when it says, now let's go back to the situation of the man, where the Chazal say that if a person is mispata miyeno, so it was yeshlo midas kono. You see? The pshat is like this. There's really two types of pitoy. One type of pitui is on an emotional level. You know, the guy offered me a drink and he got involved in the emotions. That's not midas kainai. Midas kainai means it's similar to God's action. What was God's action? God's action was based upon knowledge. The knowledge that man has another side. So what it means is like this. That any individual who recognizes that he made a mistake in judging another individual, and it's not that he's flattered by the peace offering and his ego is satisfied and that's why he gives in. That's a smaller level. That's not midas kono. Anybody can be that way. Hey, flatter a guy enough, you know, he'll always give in to you, you know, be happy to have you, like you. That's not a big deal. What it means like this, that a person who judged another individual, and then when the other individual came to him and offered him the ayin, he recognized, just a second, we see here another part of this man's nature. He saw a new dimension. So he said rationally that my original decision was really a mistake in regard to this person. That's yesh lo midas kono. You see? Not a person whose ego is flattered into liking another person. It's an emotion. It has nothing to do with das kono. But it means an individual who rationally saw that he made a mistake with regard to another person, and that his judgment was based on his assumption that there's only one side to his nature, but now he recognizes, yes, you know, this person is evil. It's true. He did something wrong, terrible. But just a second, there's another part to him also. And because of he has this other part, therefore I certainly shouldn't act towards him the way I wanted to act before. That's midas kono. That's exactly what God did. So what God did was that originally man had only one expression, so he was destroyed, one part. But then later, once the narcissistic self was broken through the marble, so now he vacillates. So God says, now that he vacillates, so now I have to judge him differently. See, there's two sides to his nature. One side is very bad. It's terrible. But the fact remains there's another side to him also, you see? So therefore I can't judge him like I did before. If a human being judges another human being that same way and makes that recognition, you see, of course with a human being it has to be an admission of error. With God it's not an admission of error, it's a different situation. With a human being it's an admission of error, then he's acting like God did in by the marble. That's the Pshat of the Pasuk. The difference, God saved Noach, did not mean at that time that there would never again be a marble. See, God saved Noach meant at this time that Noach will be saved, right? And he will be able to carry on, but it could be destroyed again in another few years. See? So that wasn't there. So there, because originally when God created the world, he created the world and yet it was going to be destroyed. Right? So this could be the same thing as Sheshi Mebrashis. Again, in other words, he gave Noach a chance to live, but who knows? Another 20 years, 30 years, 10 generations, 5 generations, whatever it might be, he could be destroyed again. But God said, no, another destroy me. A car, because what happened in the marble was a breakdown of was something that broke down the narcissistic individual. So therefore, this reflects that.
That's the pshat.
That's the pshat. It's a reflection of it. It's not because what Noach himself did. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Noach was a tzaddik, so Noach was saved. Oh, that's what you're asking. I understand
how
you're asking.
That's
right. Oh, I understand. Yeah. Good. Noach's right. Noach was a tzaddik, and Noach was saved, and even if Noach wasn't Machmir Rekabim, there was no problem with him. But the action of Noach was one which was symbolic of man change. In general, of the change in man in general. In other words, Noach's korban reflected another side to his nature, and this idea of another side, the other side to his nature, wasn't just in regard to Noach, but it was in regard to all of man. All of man. Because korbanos, it means that people in general will always have that idea of being makif korbanos just like Noach. It wasn't Noach's individual korban. In that case, Noach's korban represented the korban of mankind. Why is a person makif korban? Because a person is crazy as he gets, there's a time when he sits down and says to himself, just a minute, the reason why I did all this is because of I can't see anything outside of my own emotions, my own desires. But just a minute, there's an external reality here. And then he starts recognizing external reality and he brings a carbon. He's sorry for what he did, he makes an offering. Of course, he can't give God anything, but he does an action which represents that idea. You see? So. Yeah, Noach would have been saved anyways. This carbon was a reflection of the carbon of humanity. see? That's what it means. Nerech was saved anyways, no question about it. Yes, the same quality. The quality is a recognition of an external existence. That's the quality. See, if I go over to somebody and I bring him a drink and I want to make peace with him, I want to appease him, it's a recognition of that's the opposite of narcissism. Narcissism, I don't need anybody. Narcissistic individual doesn't go bring offerings to anybody. You bring something to me. I don't have to go to you. See? That's the thing. That's why it's a big thing. I'm not going to go to him. Let him come to me. See, it wasn't me. It means that let him come to me. I don't have to recognize somebody outside of myself. Right. I'm too involved with myself. You see? He has to come to me. He needs to recognize somebody outside of himself because he's deficient. You see, that's a breakdown in his narcissism. That's what people mean when they say that. So the bringing a carbon has in it is the quality of recognition, and also bringing. That's why, by the way, that's why it's very hard to ask mechila. Mechila is a tremendous thing for us to ask mechila. Tremendous mitzvah, tremendous chiyuv. But very few people do it. What prevents a person from doing it? It's a breakdown of his narcissism. As I have to break down the ego, I have to go over to him and ask him. That means I need him. I mean, this it's too much of a breakdown. Painful thing to do. See, that's why people have difficulty doing it. That's what the Gemara means. So even though the analogy is not the same, in one case it's a relationship to God, who is a qualitatively differentiated being. You see. Wouldn't say superior, because superior might imply quantitative superiority. But qualitatively superior to us, that's true. And over here, it's a person who's on the same level, perhaps, maybe. You know what I mean? But the idea is the same. The idea is recognition of an external reality. That's the idea. Yes?
You would accomplish that today with tefillah, I guess.
What's the carbon in reality? He didn't have any problem with it. The fact that he judges the individual differently than he did before. He recognizes that the other individual has another side to his nature and that he misjudged him. That's what it means in Daskana.
What's the other side?
That's what it means in Daskana. But it means a person has to be rational in relationship to his chaver. That he has to recognize many times that the point is like this. The point is like this. See, people always want to think, usually they want to think either he's a good person or he's a bad person. See, that's already an emotional relationship. He's good or he's bad. He's a good guy. He's a bad guy. See, this usually depends on how the other person's emotions hit this person's emotions. You know what I mean?
How much one does to the other.
Yeah. Now, the thing is like this. That over here, a rational relationship is where he says, look, he has certain bad traits, but he also has a good side to him also. I can't condemn him. I can't totally write him off. You see? It's not an emotionally satisfying type of a relationship. But that's a relationship which is doma to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it's a relationship of das. It's a relationship of das, not an emotional one. That's the point. That's why it says that's the pshat. Kol mispata miyeno, yesh midas kono. If he lives with his chaverim in a rational way, recognizes, says, all right, the man did a terrible thing, has a weakness, but he also has a good side to his nature too. I can't write him off of me. Not going to say that this individual is worthless. Can't do that. Emotionally satisfying is only the other type of relationship, a good guy bad guy relationship. That's an emotional relationship. Hey, he did this to me, I'll forget it. I can't have anything to do with him. That's it. So he's a bad guy. That's not me. That's not a higher level above the emotional relationship. Should be more of the intellectual. See, more of the more have more to do with his cognitive component, rather than just the emotional. See, that's what a person should try to do. There's a lot of things like that. For instance, and we'll speak about if you speak about, for instance, Avas Yisrael. I mean, Avas Yisrael. What is the concept of Avas Yisrael? So the Rambam says in I think it's about Perek Chafei, Nachas Sanhedrin, that even though the person who is a leader, a god lador, a person's a leader, so he shouldn't look down. Even though he sees people that they are shaitim and that they have fasrenus and they have they're not really that good, he says still he shouldn't look down upon them, because he says Hein Tzvayis Hashem. He says these are the Tzvayis Hashem Shaitziyim Eretz Mitzrayim. What? Right, doesn't it say Hein Tzvayis Hashem too? Yeah. So the thing is, so the avas Yisrael that a person should have should be tied in rationally with avas Hashem. It should tie in rationally. It means you see if you hear about another Jew and something unfortunate happens to another Jew on the other side of the globe, it should bother you. Why should it bother you? But you don't know this fellow. Not an emotional relationship. But the point is that here is an individual whose purpose was to be a means of bringing forth Kiddush Hashem, Kiddush Ma'agadol, to bring forth, he had a designation, this Yisrael. He had a designation. His designation was to show people the true ideas, to show the world the true ideas. B'nei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov. You see? V'nei Mitzvah Yisrael Hashem, Sheitzim Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because of Shema Yagadol. So in order that people should know what the true life is, the whole world should know. So this man, something happened to him. That means it's a terrible tragedy. It's a terrible tragedy. It was an individual whose purpose in life was had the highest designation. Even it doesn't matter. That's why it doesn't matter if he was religious or not religious. The Nevi'im went to people to wave their abal, right? Certainly we're not religious people. But they were religious, wrong kind of religion. Now, that's the truth. I mean, basically, all people are religious, just have the wrong religion. So, conservative Jews, Reform Jews, all these type of... how do you feel? How should a person feel towards them? You should feel Avas Yisrael towards them. Why? Because they have this designation. And it's unfortunate that in their present state, they can't realize it. I mean, it's okay, so that should motivate a person to try to help them out of that situation. But definitely, rationally, yes, they have a feeling of Ava towards them, a recognition of their position. That's Tzvayis Hashem. Tzvayis Hashem. Ava Hashem dictates that a person should feel that way. You see? The same thing is true with the idea of Ava Saris Yisrael too. I mean, you see, find Chazal and Menashe Kipi Da'aku. They kissed the ground when they came to Eretz Yisrael. Because the reason is, because this land, this Makayim, was the Makayim that was designated to be to bring about the perfect system of Yadas with all the halachis and all the mitzvahs and mishpat and chesed and chachma and teira, everything for the most perfect situation that mankind could ever have was it could be brought about only through Eretz Yisrael and Migdash and Yerushalayim. You see? So if a person has that Avas Hashem, so then he will have this recognition, have that experience. If he doesn't have it, then he won't. Okay? So it's all a part of Avas Hashem. It's all a part of Avas Hashem. Depends how close a person's emotions are tied into the Avas Hashem. If his emotions aren't tied in that well, so naturally he won't be able to do it. I mean, just to force a person just to go there and kiss the stones just doesn't mean anything. So that's to come in a natural expression from a love of the perfect system. And a love of the of God's purpose. See? That's that's the pshat. That's the pshat. Chazal were on that level. They were on that level. They're on that level. That's the. But that's the way a person should raise his should try to raise himself to a higher level. Raises his emotions. His emotional relations should become on a higher level. And then you'll find when a person's like that, a lot of the pettiness that goes on, Bein Adam L'Chaver will be removed. A lot of the pettiness, Bein Adam L'Chaver, is based upon the world of our own emotions, you see, that we can't get out of. And the justification of them, the objective justification of our own emotions, that's what's wrong. The emotion itself isn't so bad. All right, everyone has emotions. But the point is the objectification of the emotions is what's bad. When the emotion causes the mind to say that this is correct, this is true, this is reality. See? When you judge another person on the basis of your own emotions, that's when you... that's right. And the Das Kono is just the opposite. When he's Yesh Bomi Das Kono is where he's judging him based upon rationality. That's a higher level already. When a person goes to that level, a lot of the pettiness of human relationships is lost. The little nonsensical things. Lashon Hara and the Rechibus and the all this type of stuff, because a person gets out of this already. He's in a higher level. That's what a person should strive for. Okay. Yeah. It's something that I think is important, and if we have nothing else, maybe we'll just do this idea now. All right? Unless you have something else you want to take. Let's do something else.
I have another question.
Go ahead. Things like this, it has to do with El Mabor, really. It has to do with El Mabor. But El Mabor also, the reason why the El Mabor is so important, like the Rambam Hilchos Teshuva mentions El Mabor, you know, because our ideas pertaining to El Mabor affect us in El Mazeh. You know what I mean? The ideas, the concept of El Mabor is something which is important to us now. It's not just talking about a future time. So I think that it's a very important area for a person to have knowledge in. And it's something which, if a person doesn't have knowledge of that area, it's almost impossible that he should really be able to live a life in which he isn't caught up totally by the physical. I just want to mention something that the really, how does it work? When a person fears death. A person fears death because a person recognizes, or comes to the conclusion, at any rate, that the only thing that he has in this life, the only thing that there is the senses, and the pleasures of the senses. Now, since he is convinced that the only thing that there is the senses and the pleasures of the senses, as a natural result, you see, he will fear a time when all this will cease. See? The body obviously can't convince himself that in the grave he's going to enjoy the senses. And the body deteriorates, decays, so everything that he has, his nice looks, his nice clothes, whatever it is, all gone, I mean, destroyed. And it's like a tragic finale to this life. And it seems that a person really wouldn't be able to even be happy for one day if he would think about this. But somehow or other, a man is equipped with the ability of denial, and he could put it out of his mind, and he can go on. Can imagine a person dressing up for an affair and being concerned with how he looks. He'll think that in a few more years he's going to be in the ground rotting. I mean, I don't think you worry if you got a good shave or not. You know, I mean, it wouldn't make too much of a difference. See? So he has the ability to deny this reality. And of course, religionists have always taken advantage of this fact, and they try to bring the reality back to the person, so that to get them in the other direction. Of course, insurance, life insurance men also do the same thing. So the thing is that this phenomena is one. This is the way the average person looks at the life and a death. Therefore, he reacts a certain way. Once denial is instituted, then he can go on living his life, the life that he wants, the part of life that he wants. But he doesn't feel too confident when people tell him that there's a world to come, because there's not really too much that he could associate with the world to come. The world, now that's one thing. He can't satisfy his desires in the insofar as the world to come, so therefore he doesn't want to hear about it. He would like the idea. What he does really is he abstracts the idea of reward and something which is good to him, and even though he doesn't have the taivas, but he tries to place that into the next world. Okay, but it's a shaky thing, you see. That's why he's not rushing to get there too quickly. Now, but I say like this, honestly like this, that there is something else really also, another factor involved also, that forgetting about the individual's desires in this world, his earthly desires, there is a part of the mind which recognizes reality. Aside from his desires, because that's the basic difference between man and animal. An animal can think also, to a certain extent, and he could do certain actions which involve a type of logic, perhaps. Certain things which are logical things which a person can do. But his thought is restricted only to the area of his own satisfaction, the instinct. That's it. As soon as the instinct is gone, that's the end of his thought. The instinctual will is the prime mover. In man, it's not that way. One time I mentioned this before. In man, there's another will. There's the objective will. And that's why he's in conflict, because the objective will doesn't just... An animal will never think about its own death. It can't reflect on its own death, because that's not an instinctual thing. Instinct, on the contrary, is to stay alive. A person can think about his own death because of the fact that he has the objective will. The objective reality will spin anyways, it'll play anyways, regardless of the fact that there's no instinctual attachment to it, and therefore he'll start to see certain things which go against his instincts, and then he causes him to have conflicts. On the one hand, he wants security, on the other hand, he has his mind recognizes there are things that could occur, that could be very bad for him, you see? So he feels fear, and he gets caught up in all these different problems, which he has during his lifetime. Now, I want to say like this, that there's another reason that prevents us from seeing Olam Haba. Not just the fact that a person is tied to his instinctual gratifications. That's one thing. He's tied to his instinctual gratifications, so he doesn't want to think beyond the period of his death. But there's another reason why a person can't see the world to come. Because it doesn't even come into the scope of the reality principle. You see? The instinctual principle, there's no question, it doesn't come under the framework of the instinctual principle. But I'm saying that wouldn't be so bad, you see? Many things don't come under the instinctual. Man still accepts them as reality, reflects upon them. But the world to come doesn't even come under the objective principle, the reality principle of the soul. See, I say that if a person would be able to see in some way that it does have an objective reality, I think it would make a big difference in his appreciation. So I just want to say something like this. A person has to maintain that what he does is real. What he does is real. And the thing is that the truth of the matter is interesting, but modern science really shows man in a very interesting way that... something about the world to come. Because the fact is that until very relatively recently, people always thought that at least the senses are portraying something which is actual. See? Like, for instance, if a person will feel a table, will feel that it has certain properties. It's smooth, it's square, it's whatever it is. Certain properties exist in that table. It's hard. These things were assumed to be objective qualities. But now, with the discovery of the atomic world, you see, atomic particles, man becomes aware that this really isn't so. That the truth of the matter is there's no such thing as a solid surface like you feel. It doesn't exist. Actually, there are things that are constantly in motion inside that what you think is that surface. And there's more space there than there is matter, contrary to what your senses tell you. You see? So it comes out, an interesting thing, that the world of the senses, this world, which the senses convey to us, to our mind, is not the real world. It's an amazing thing. Not the real world. The only reason that things feel the way they do is because of accidental factors like our size, the nature of our senses, you see. So the nature of our senses convey to us a certain type of a world, but that world, that's not the real world. The real world is totally different. If we'd be able to see the real world, we'd be, it would be something that would be so amazing, we wouldn't even be able to feel comfortable feel we know anything about it. We're familiar with it in any way whatsoever. Person was the size of an atom, and he'd be walking around and looking at atomic particles, and it'd be a constant world of whirring and motion, and it's unbelievable. The world that we're in, the world which seems to be a stable world, is not real, because even the particles that we look at that seem to be stable aren't really stable. Inside of them is a tremendous amount of activity. The only reason why they seem stable is because of our size, so there's a certain... the motion is restricted within a certain area, and because of our size, we can't see the motion internally, and the objects don't really move because the motion is going on within a certain restricted area. You see, and those things that do move, we can't see. Like molecules of a person's baking bread, so he'll smell the bread in the other room because the molecules move to the other room. And he doesn't notice it because he can't see those things, you see? So the world that our senses portray to us, it turns out, is only an accidental world. This the ancients didn't know. The ancients didn't have this knowledge. But we today do have that knowledge. The fact remains, one second, fact remains like this. Fact remains that when you take a look at that situation, comes out very interestingly that the real world is not the world of the senses. You see? So how do we know? How can a scientist know what the real world is? How can a person penetrate the real world if the senses are all faulty? Everything it's telling us is wrong. See? What's the answer? The answer is mind. The only way that man can penetrate is through mind. So it comes out that the only way that man can get down to an underlying reality, and there is an underlying reality because we see as man uses intelligence, so what happens? He starts understanding more, and the accidental features but the point is, when he understands, how does he know he understands more? He understands more because he sees the results through the accidents which his senses pick up, you see? But he understands that too. Like, he can understand that, he'll understand now that heat is a motion of the molecules, you see, caused by the motion of the molecules. Energy is energy, transferences going on. So once he understands that, then he'll understand why his senses pick it up in a certain way, and he'll see, he'll be more consistent with his senses, you see? His senses are the accidents. But when he understands the essence, the senses will have a certain conformity. So while it's true that the senses are operative, but the senses are not really giving him the true phenomena being conveyed to him only by the mind. So it's an amazing thing. So we see the world of the senses that a person considers to be real is not the real world. There is an underlying world. That world can only be penetrated by mind. So it shows a person an interesting thing. And I think that it's important for a person to recognize this. Because the reason why, like the Rambam says in one of his igros, he says that people deny Olam Haba. The reason why they deny Olam Haba is because the only reality to them is the senses. If a person only recognizes the reality of the senses, then the world of soul, the world of mind, Hasharas HaNefesh, is far-fetched. Can't accept it. As much as religiously he'd like to accept it, you see, but his mind doesn't accept it because the only reality is the senses. But we today are privileged to know that that isn't true, that the reality is not just the senses. You see that the senses that we have aren't really accurate. You see, aren't really accurate. Now, the thing is like this. In the world of physical taiva, you see one thing, that the world of physical taiva deals with what, really? Deals with the world of the senses. So you see one thing, that the world of the physical type is not the world of reality. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not the world of reality. So when it's in there, what difference does it make? But a person will say, yeah, fine, but I'm still satisfying my taiva, see? And so I say, insofar as that is concerned, you're right. You're right. But I still say like this, that a person's taifa is always strengthened by the fact that he ascribes reality to it. See? A person doesn't just want to think that he's just satisfying an instinct. A person wants to think that there's some reality here. This is a good, this is a reality. And once a person recognizes that all these taifas are just the way the senses accidentally pick them up, but there's a real world underneath that has nothing to do with this, you see? Then it puts a damper on the taifas. You understand what I mean? You see? Yeah, it puts a damper. And I think that that is a very important thing. And it is a very important thing in a person's life. A person should recognize that. It turns out that the world of taiva is the world of accidents, not the real world. An interesting thing.
Wasn't that Russell's idea of the law
burning up? No, I perceive it. Like a person will say, this is the type of object that I want.
Right.
For my desire, for my taifa. Now the thing is that this object which he depicts in his mind with all the features that he wants, All those features are only accidents. They're not real. You understand what I mean?
Would you rather do something?
You see? Give you a certain pleasure.
That's right.
But the let me give you an example. A person will go into the country, right? And I'll see a beautiful mountains and trees, you know, wow, this is unbelievable.
Right.
See? Now, what gets him is the senses. But if you don't understand the processes of photosynthesis, you see, and how all these things really, how they're really working, that's the real source of the what's going on. And the way he sees this beauty is only an accidental thing.
That recognition,
that knowledge will put a damper on his appreciation. You see, we'll put a damper on it. Why? Because it takes a person wants to appreciate something that he feels is the real thing. If it's only an accidental result, you're appreciating accidental results. Fantastic, you know what I mean? Now, the moment that's the case, like a person will sit by a fire and enjoy the beauty of the fire, right? But if a person thinks to himself that I'm enjoying watching the carbon and oxygen atoms merge, I mean, it's already takes away from the enjoyment. See, what I'm saying is, the knowledge... recognize that it's not the real thing that takes away from the enjoyment. That's why...
That's why
as much as it's true that... Bring him to the true, but true appreciation in Yad, this is never physical appreciation. True, what's the greatest appreciation? The appreciation of Chachma. That's the intellect, the mind, because that's where the real world is, you see? The world of the sense is only the accidental world. You see? So there, you understand what I mean? The world of the sense is the accidental world. Now, the thing is that a person has a part of his nature. You see, there is the reality principle in an individual is such that he will not permit himself to have a total satisfaction unless the reality principle can go along. I'm not saying he can't enjoy himself, but I'm saying the enjoyment is limited inherently. The moment that part of his mind, because he does have a reality principle, see, the moment that part of his mind is recognized that this is not the reality, that takes away from it. Yeah. Very good. A person watching a movie, and they're getting very involved in the movie. But they start thinking about how Hollywood put the film together. They have to block that out of their mind. You see? They have to block that out of your mind. This is a real thing. You have to use the thing. This is really happening right now. See? The more a person is involved in the Chachma in the real world. The more a person is involved in the Chachma in the real world, then he's able to overcome the difficulties that are imposed upon him by the instinctual forces. You see, and the more the instinctual forces recede and lose their power. Question of science. The big question of science today is even whether or not. The mind, whether or not we could ever fathom the ultimate reality. I mean, it's a problem. Because even though we can go beyond our senses, mind can go beyond senses, but it is tied to senses to a certain degree. And the question is, if the ultimate reality, finally, beneath everything, is too far removed, man will never be able to fathom it. That's it. He's reached the point.
Gone.
That's gone. That's right. As they say in physics, say the problems grow with the solutions. Keeps on growing more. We solve one problem, they have five more creep up, but more difficult than was before. Question is, in which direction is... The question is really, basically, whether man's mind can really fathom the ultimate reality. Question.
Definitely not, really? Because man can never know, understand God. So in other words, really? Man can never be satisfied also. Because
something he never attained.
Man can never be satisfied because man's nature is a striving creature. That's his nature. He will only be happy when he recognizes that. If he wants any particular accomplishment, he'll never be happy. You understand what I mean? If man's goal in life is any particular type of knowledge or any particular type of ability, he will never be happy because man by nature cannot fathom, ultimately, the ultimate reality, you definitely can't fathom. The ultimate reality is God. That's why we have no definition, yadis, of God. No conception of God. Only negative ideas. That's the ultimate reality. Question is even the universe, if we could ever fathom that. Another question. I don't know. We don't know if man's mind is capable of doing such a thing. There's no reason to assume that it is. There's no reason to assume that it is. Now, the thing is, so how could man ever be happy if that's the case? The answer is man will never be happy as long as he feels he has set goals. He has to do this, or he has to reach this level of knowledge, and he has to accomplish A, B, C. He can't. The only time a person will be happy is when he recognizes his true nature. His true nature is a striving creature. An individual who can be involved in an endless process of thought. That should be his goal. That recognition. Yes, he will.
No, but insofar as he's involved in that process,
he'll be very unhappy. No. He'll be very happy. Because that process is what his nature is. And every creature is happy once it reaches, once it lives according to its nature. See?
That's not
striving. See, man is not really man, the ultimate man doesn't strive. The ultimate man recognizes that his nature is to be involved in a process. He's very happy with that process, and he's always involved as much as he can, of course, in that process. That's what the purpose of the man is. See, now, when he comes to that recognition, he's very happy, because he doesn't feel sad that he doesn't attain ultimate achievements. He doesn't understand the ultimates. He's just very happy with the process of uncovering. You see? That process is, his nature is, when it says, Vayipach Papa v'nishmas chayim, it means that it's a reflection of the Tzalam Alekim. And so far as we can appreciate Chachmas Hashem, there is some Chachma out there, there's a real Chachma out there, something which is Chachmas Hashem out there, which man can be involved in the process of uncovering. Whether ultimate reality, whether he will achieve an ultimate understanding of what's out there, that we never know. I mean, no scientist would be foolish enough to say that he can. I mean, I'll give you an example. Let's say without the Einsteinian ideas of motion and time, simple thing like motion and time, something which is the most basic idea. I don't mean simple in the sense simple to understand, but I mean basic. How could you have physics without knowing what time and motion are? And yet it took man thousands of years to come to the Einsteinian conception of what this is. Now, if you never had a mind, let's say, for instance, man's mind never reached above 140 IQ. That means he'd never be able to fathom, because you see, people can't, even today can't even understand what is meant by time and space in physics. Now, if a person would only have 140 IQ, right, he'd never be able to get to the real idea of time and space. He therefore would never be able to understand any physics. Really? A second, really? He'd never be able to understand it. Now the question is, so now man has 185, 200. Is that enough? Maybe you need 2,000. Oh, really? That's the case. So then, he will never be able to do it. And I don't care how many generations will go by or how many people, because you can make experiments from now till the end of the universe. But the fact remains, you can never really, if you don't have anything to interpret the experiments, and you don't have the ability to interpret, the mental ability, who says that? Why should we assume that man has the ability? Why? Because we feel like it. I mean, what? On the contrary, wouldn't it be very odd indeed to say that the universe is a fantastic puzzle and we just happen to be the right intelligence to be able to solve that puzzle? That would be a tremendous coincidence. Tremendous coincidence. See? No, I'm not talking about the what God's purpose is. I'm just saying, I'm talking about how a scientist would look at it. It'd be very, very accidental to say we just happen to be right. You know, when you go to a store to buy puzzles for your children, so they have different sizes. 8-year-old, 10-year-old, 14-year-old, you know what I mean?
No, but
different
every
puzzles
time you
can't
fit
be
done. In a piece, you come closer to the ultimate.
Yes, but
you wait for the next generation. How do you know it's not going to get better?
Ability of this generation.
How do you know?
Wash Yisun should. Because Wash Yisun the man gets smarter.
By the way, I assume that man's intelligence will keep on increasing for ad infinitum. There's no reason to assume that way. Even Even if you would operate in evolutionary terms, evolution is only survival of the fittest. Once you survive, that's it.
Who says it necessarily has to be
entitled? When a child is 6 years old, he never assumed that he'd know what he knows when he's 14. Does that mean when he's 25, he can't imagine he's going to know when he's 50. When he's 50, he's going to know so much more than when he's 25? I mean, that's ridiculous.
No, what I'm saying is, though...
Thank you. One second. Primitive man, you look back at primitive man's IQ wasn't less than ours. Wasn't less intelligent. Matter of fact, if you take a look at if you read the book by Thor Heyerdahl on the Easter Island, you find that the greatest scientist in the world couldn't figure out how they raised a statue that weighed several tons. Greatest scientist in the world today could not figure out how primitive people raised a statue, and they spent a year on this island, and they got very friendly with the inhabitants, the inhabitants of the island. And the inhabitants of the island had a Masorah going back for generations on how to do this thing, which they wouldn't reveal because it was a private religion. They had their own little caves and their own little, and they wouldn't reveal to outsiders. So scientists couldn't would ask them. They would tell them, "We don't know." And that's it. But it turned out that the Thor Heyerdahl stayed on the island for a year, got very friendly, or one of his men got very friendly with one of the people who was who was a Bala Masara there, who knew how to do it, see, and he showed them, and then he convinced them to show him the answer. So they got together, all these people got together, and they showed them how they raised a statue, where he used it several times without any machinery.
And they do it.
Easter Island. Cute book. So they do is, yeah.
Pictures?
As a matter of fact, he's the one that's out. He's the one that made that statement. He says, primitive man was no less intelligent in any way than modern man. Just because he was operating, he's using his intelligence in a different frame of reference. Now the frame of reference changes. That's all. It takes generations to change the frame of reference, but it doesn't mean that he's inherently less intelligent. If you took a guy from back there and raised him today, he might be Einstein. No problem. No question. So the guy who figured this out obviously is very intelligent. No scientist could figure it out today. And they worked it out. So it must have been pretty intelligent.
You can say how it works.
They might have probably had more motivation than the modern man, but the fact remains they were working out. The way they did it was with leverage. They just take this pole, they get like 40 people, and they put like a rock, you know, use a fulcrum, and you have the pole goes over here under the, under the statue. And they get a lot of people to lean on the pole, and the statue would move a fraction. They put a pebble underneath it and move again, put another pebble. Till eventually, after like several months, it wouldn't take that long. I think it took like a month. And after a few days, the statue was lying on a whole bunch of pebbles.
Right.
You see?
It's all full at the bottom. Level.
then they pull away. Then they dig away the pebbles near the bottom, and the statue slips down like this. And they take away all the pebbles. Okay, and the scientist comes and says, "Hey, what happened? How they do it? They showed them how they did it. They have pictures of how they did it.
I love it.
If I love a London, then I say he will never be happy. If a person is striving to be involved in the process and to be able to be part of the process of enjoying Torah, then he will be a happy person. See? If he wants to have a certain level of knowledge in Torah, that's where his mind is fixated to reach a certain level, then it's just a goal-oriented individual, and he has the, of course, the satisfactions and pains involved with goals. The life of a person who has goals has certain satisfactions and certain pains. You know, you have to weigh it and see one against the other, but it's not totally pleasurable. Now, the only totally pleasurable life of man is when man is living in accordance with his nature. His nature is not to achieve a specific level of knowledge. His nature is to be able to be involved in the process of knowledge. Then, if a person can live that way, then a person will really enjoy himself. If he enjoys the process, that's when he can reach total enjoyment. Olam Haba, you see, the idea of Olam Haba is very difficult for a person to accept as long as he thinks the world of the senses is the real world and the only world. But once he recognizes the world of mind, you see, then it doesn't become such a difficulty, such an impossibility. And that's an important thing. Okay. That's it.
Ve'ela mashpat mashatasim ofneim, right? Those are the first things, the first level they're makabel, the mashpat, right? The question is, I mean, you think they're more important things, should come first. it's filling Krishna, mezuzah, and basic things. These are things you should come first, right? Why is it available to spot the sick and have it every? I mean, this isn't the main thing. What's the answer? In religiosity, a person can do things for two reasons. A person can be religious for two reasons. He can be religious because he thinks he's going to get materialism too. You know what I mean? And it's part of his religion. In other words, the reason why he's religious is because he thinks he's going to gain materialistic things. So the fact that he's religious doesn't mean that is really the level. You understand what I mean? Insofar, however, insofar as Mishpah is concerned, that's where you really see if the guy is. That's where you really see if the guy is removed from the physical, because that's where he has to turn away the physical. He has to actually turn away from the physical. You know what I mean? In Mishpah, there's an actual turning away from the physical. That's the real demonstration. But in so far as from guy is concerned. Hey, guy can be sure. Of course, he davens this. Why? He wants to be healthy. He wants to have money. He wants to have this. You know, all these things can be done for physical purposes. The real demonstration of not caring about the physical, of turning away from the physical, is mishpat. That's why the Nazim never criticizes people telling them to put on phones. They don't put on enough phone. They don't put on sensors. That's true. You have one part in Yom Yovi there with Shabbos, but the whole Nazim is all tzedek mishpat. Why? Because that's the real criterion for the perfection of man. Every degree is specific. That's why it starts with every degree. Because every degree is in a situation where you have a guy who is a subservient to you. It was never. So that's where you can really take advantage. That's where all the halachas come in. That, in a situation where you can really get away with it. You see? That's where you see whether the guy really is L'shem Shemayim. That's really L'shem Shemayim. Well, let me put it this way. That's really Yir Shemayim. Yir Shemayim. That's the